Welcome to the Enlighten Up Podcast, where I am going to take you into a deep exploration of what it means to exist in this current reality. We are going to raise your vibes, open your mind, expand your heart, and dive deep into the wondrous mysteries and possibilities of this lifetime. There's been a spiritual catalyst that has set in motion the awakening process of many across the globe to return to the knowingness of self and unite what has been separated. Together, we're going to bring light into that darkness. We're going to remember the joy of living. But most of all, we're going to turn up the volume of our own eternal power and do the thing we're here to do. Welcome back to the Enlighten Up Podcast. I hope you're all doing very well this evening. I am excited to bring a new guest to the show for you tonight. His name is Rob Gauthier, and he is called the ET Whisperer. He is a professional world-renowned channeler for over 11 years, and he has channeled hundreds of ET consciousness. He has been featured in many documentaries, internet shows, interviews, and books for his unique channeling abilities. As his name implies, he connects to extraterrestrial and extra-dimensional entities while in a deep trance channeling state. He operates out of Kalamazoo, Michigan, but has a worldwide following and has toured the United States to share his channeling. Many who take interest in his channeling have found great information that have helped transform their own lives by understanding the nature of their own powers. And Rob's main guides are Aerodiff and Treb, and have helped hundreds of thousands of people across the world find their own power by directly interacting with them or watching the hundreds of free videos with thousands of hours of channeling and teachings that are made free for everyone. Rob, welcome to the show. And I totally screwed up your name just as I was saying it. It's Rob Gauthier, everyone.
Hi, I'm glad to be here and thank you so much. And I think you've got it closer than almost anybody I've talked to in the last couple of years. So you're doing great.
Well, I'm glad to have you on the show here tonight. I don't know if you know Kema and John. John reached out to me. I had them on the podcast for their oracle, their light language oracle deck that they've produced. And I know they've been part of some of your channeling sessions and teachings. And so he said that I should have you on the show. And when I looked at some of your stuff, I couldn't agree with him more.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad that I've met a lot of people through there, and John seems amazing. And I'm glad too that you found interest. And I really enjoy when people find something of value in the channeling or in our, you know, radio show, just anything we're doing or talking about, as mundane as it can seem. If someone finds any value in it, that's why I do what I do, just to get anyone to have a better experience in any way, shape, or form. It makes me feel like the effort and time to put in is worth it, you know?
Yeah. Well, your channeling is quite interesting to observe and listen to. What I really liked about how your, I guess, the entities that you're channeling who are from your Oversoul group, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So the entities that you're channeling, the way they deliver their information is really not in a way that, projects something onto someone's field of probabilities. It's about really allowing them to connect more to their own heart so that they are strengthened in their own guidance internally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things that drew me to Treb when I first met him and connected with him. I listened to the things that he shared with me, and to hear the way that it put it back into my own ball court, you know, and played it to a part of the energy where, hey, you know, this is what's happening to you because of you, not this is what's happening to you by some random unfair events that the universe is piling on top of you. It actually made me see my own part in it. And something I find unique about what Ardiff and Trev share is the way that they help you explore those parts of yourself, because it's really hard when we get caught up in things, especially in the state of the world today. You know, you look on TV, social media, you can have an instant draw to just lock in to the things that are happening around you, to you. And it does, it makes a lot of people question, you know, what the heck is going on? Why do people think this way, feel this way? Why are they attacking me for thinking or feeling this way? And it's really an intense thing for the last couple of years. So I think it's been more helpful in the last couple of years, as much help as people have found since 2010, since I've started channeling. I think the last years has been the most helpful and the most useful.
Yeah, the last couple of years has been an interesting gift for humanity. It's really put us on a fast track, I think, of evolving our consciousness and truly having to take a hard look at the things we haven't wanted to take a hard look at. I truly believe it's been a gift all in all, but oftentimes gifts come disguised as not what we think they are. And I think that's pretty much what the whole COVID thing has been for us. And of course, now the narrative is switching over to something else, which it always does, which it seems to always just put us in a state of fear or to grab our attention, which I'd love to get into later on in the show with you a little bit more. But first, could you kind of just give me and the audience a little bit more about you? Like, so you started this 11 years ago. Have you always had this gift, or did you go through some kind of awakening that really brought it on? How did it really all kind of commence for you?
It's a bit of a long story, and I've shared the story before, like in great length, and I try to compress it because it is so much to go through for people. I started off as a young kid having some types of experiences in my dream states. Before I'd go to bed, I had saw my mother's grandmother, and I was like, well, you know, she's been dead for a long time, so that can't be it. And then I'd say things to my mom and she would freak out. My family is very Christian, so they shut that down immediately. Like, no, you know, it was a dream. Let's leave it at that. So it didn't get a lot of love or attention in that part of my life. I got older, disenfranchised, disgruntled with Christianity and the religious ideas. And I had some trauma of my own that I tend to work out through my teenage years into my young adulthood. And then when I was 19, I had my son. He was born with some severe medical problems, and those problems really put my own life into a very different place. This human being that I actually loved more than I loved myself became front and center. And then to find out, you know, he wasn't going to have that future that I saw that he could have, it was pretty devastating. It led me into a pretty heavy depression, drug use, and that lasted for almost 10 years. Even though I was there with my son, taking care of him, doing all the things with him, that's really the only function in life I had besides my drug addiction. And it was bad. I started with a car accident. You know, the pain meds gave me the emotional, mental relief from the stresses of worrying about my son and worrying what would happen with him. We had doctors telling us, you know, he'll be lucky to reach 18. You know, he's 22 now. We threw a big party on his 21st birthday because that was like the major threshold of time that they'd given with him for us. And he's been beating odds ever since. And he can't talk or walk. He's in a wheelchair. He's 100% dependent, nonverbal, non-communicative. So this being changed my life, you know, and from that point, even though I was depressed and down, I always focused my love and energy on him. And finally, after losing a friend to an overdose, after many years of just going deeper and deeper into that hole and losing my relationships and love and everyone around me except for my son, I said it was time. And I ended up doing like rehabilitation and methadone clinics and all sorts of stuff until finally I got off. And when I got off drugs, it was the first time I actually got back in touch with my emotions for a long time. like since I was a teenager, even from the teenage years to when I had my son, even though I had him in my late teens, there was a lot of trauma. I was in, you know, hanging out with people who were in a gang, and violence was a big part of that. So it was a really dramatic, huge experience of really negative, heavy things that happened in the first part of my life. And I'm left with that question again, you know, what is God? What is the thing around me that makes all this beauty and that creates this thing? You know, science worked for me for a long time, you know, Big Bang, evolution, blah, blah, blah. That was okay. That worked. But after getting off the drugs and feeling that emotional energy and the mental clarity that I hadn't had for so long, it wasn't enough. So I searched and I looked and I found a spiritualism church, and they did a reading for me the first day I went in. And I was like, holy crap, they could have never known this about me, you know, before social media and stuff. And it hooked me in. So I spent time with them and I said, I wish I could do what you do. And they said, everyone can do what we do. You know, this isn't a special gift just to us. It's something you have to learn to do. They taught me meditation. Eventually, I hit a plateau on the meditation, and the church thing was still the church. A lot of fighting in that specific church. And a lot of the feelings like being back in church when I was a kid, a lot of the central dogmatic beliefs and inner fighting of beliefs within one sector that's supposed to have it all figured out. So I backed away and I started my own research, and I found the Hemi-Saint Gateway Experience from the Monroe Institute in Virginia. And that actually put me into a whole new level. And I practiced that and I did it for a long time. And one day I said, what will happen if I go beyond this 21 state? Because there's 21 levels in the meditation. So instead of counting to 22, 23, like some people might picture you would do, I just said 21 and now beyond 21. And that was the first night I met Trep, and it was a deep, deep, deep meditation. Those meditations take you to the deep place. That's why they're so profound and so useful for so many people. And that's where I met Trep. And when I met Trep, I freaked out and I thought my brain got broken and I thought I was going insane. So I stopped meditating. And at this point, like, spirituality engulfed my life. I replaced a drug addiction of nearly a decade for addiction to feeling better, an addiction to having emotions, an addiction to meditation. And I was meditating, you know, sometimes three times a day for like anywhere from 25 minutes to an hour and a half, and then closing my eyes all the time when I wasn't meditating, because that helped me feel the energy around me in a different way and feel what's going on inside of myself emotionally better. Eventually, you know, after like 3 or 4 days of not meditating, after meditating all the time forever, I went back and I said, I've got to try to see what's going on here. You know, I spent 2 years talking to Trev, going back and forth. Everything he told me, I looked up on the internet. I tried to find other answers. And there was only a few people who had said similar things to what he had said on the internet when I looked there. And one of those that was very important for my early development was Jane Roberts and the Seth material. You know, even though I had found other things like the Law of One, and I bumped into like Daryl Anka and Lee Carroll in their channeling, this Seth material just hit so heavily home with everything that Trev was saying, but expressed in such a different way. So I connected in with Trev and just spent a lot of time with them for that 2 years. And finally, I looked at my life and I said, from my drug addiction to my awakening, you know, my spiritual curiosity, my life went from like this dark black to this really bright light. But since meeting Trev, it went from this bright light to just amazingness. Like, everything about everything was so clear to me. So I'm like, Trev, you know, this is something you've done for me that helped me grow and expand. Can we do this for other people? You know, I've seen this person online channel. Can we do that? Oh yeah, we can do that. And he teaches me a few things, and I look at the internet, and then I start channeling. And within probably 5 or 6 channelings, maybe 4 or 5, a handful of personal sessions where I'd either record myself or my son's mother when we were living together would ask questions. And then all of a sudden I'm on YouTube. I'm like, I've got to share this right away. So I did that. I did it for years. And eventually it led me to meeting the second being that I channel now, Ardiff. Back in 2012, I'd been channeling publicly for a couple of years at that point, and someone approached me about reading a book, and he said, can we have Treb connect us with other beings that like live on this planet, or other beings that he knows, or something like that? And I said, well, let's ask him, you know? And he asked Treb, is there anybody that you connect to, like Rob connects to you to get information? Is there anyone that you connect to get information that we could talk to? And that's when he brought in Ardiff. And in that whole book, it was like the most intense 20 some odd pages of material throughout the whole book, explaining how the universe is designed, how consciousness evolves, how physical things evolve with consciousness, and just this such in-depth, powerful information that I had never even considered as a possibility before. And even though Treb described these things to me, he never elaborated it in a way that was so comprehensive and compact and so in-depth. And ever since then, I was like, yeah, you know, hey, let's try to channel Ardiff again. But I couldn't channel myself. I channeled Treb, and Treb would channel this being. And after a couple of years of channeling full time, taking it as a profession, it meant I was channeling like every day, all day, you know, at least 2 or 3 times in a day, Monday through Friday, sometimes Monday through Sunday, just channeling all the time. And that's when it really started to connect deeply with me, because it wasn't just me connecting with Treb anymore. Now Ardiff's there, and he comes in one night while me and my wife, Kalina, were on our radio show that we were doing. We would do channeling as part of the radio. We would do it every week, and then once a month we'd do a channeling. And on the time we channeled Ardiff, he said, I want to start working more regularly with you. And ever since then, he's been a part of my channeling. And now I think I probably channel Ardiff more than I do Treb, publicly for sure, but even in private interactions with sessions for people, I think I channel him probably 65 to 70% of all the channeling I do now. And I've met other beings. I mean, Treb and Ardiff alone have connected me to several hundreds of different entities, guides for people who get sessions, or entities that have something they want to share from their perspective, or beings that they thought would be able to bring a certain quantity of information into our collective a little better than they could. And that brings us to, you know, today, where we're at right now, with lots of hundreds of entities channeled and tons of information backlogged since 2010.
Wow. You're right. That's a lot that you did. You did very well at compressing all of that.
Thank you.
I have so many questions. I hope I don't miss any. So let's go back then to your son. What was the big, because, you know, I think especially if you're coming out of intense drug addiction and you're finally wanting to feel all your feelings again and not run away from that, and then you have your son who you can't communicate with in the normal ways that we're all used to, and what was the biggest, or has been the biggest lesson for you and your relationship with him that he's been able to teach you?
He's taught me a few things. My drug addiction started when he was about 2 or 3, when I really saw the depths of what his issues would be. But before that, he taught me how to love. You know, I thought I knew what love was. I'd say, hey, I love you, to his mom, which was my girlfriend then, and my parents and my sisters. But at that time in my life, you know, if there was a car heading towards all of us and I could only save one person, it would always be myself, right? You know, hey, gotta take care of me. And when he came along, it stopped being that way. There was a human being alive who I loved more than I could love myself. And that taught me that love was bigger than what I thought it was. And my daughter, who's now 2.5 years old, taught me that I can love a lot of people with a lot of myself and love, you know, these two beings more than I do myself times 10 and be able to love two of them at once. So my kids in general have taught me love, and the things that I've learned with interacting with him, the most important spiritual lesson that I learned when going through trying to understand why this would happen to him. You know, my mind says, hey, he was injured at birth, and this injury caused brain damage, and this brain damage created these problems for him. Why would this happen? You know, in a universe where we're supposed to be powerful and this. And Trep says to me, you know, what do you think is involved with your son coming? Don't you think he had a part of that? Don't you think he had a decision in that? And that was hard for me to hear. Like, why, you know, he could have had any other life. Why would he want to do that? And then explain to me, you know, when you're going through several lives where you're a soldier, where you're going out on a field and you're killing people, and you're using your body and you're taking commands from other people or using other lifetimes to solve complex problems, to create and invent things, you're using your mind and body all the time. But what if you wanted a life with just using your emotions, like just focusing on that part and being super heavy emotional learning lesson? How would you do that? Well, this is one way. And it clicked. It was like, oh my God, you know, that's it. That's
wow.
And it was rough. Like I said, it was rough for me to hear that, but eventually it makes me respect. I've always had a love for my kids that was unreal, but there's still always that part that says they chose me as a parent. I've got to protect them. I've got to do this for them. You know, I've got to make sure that they have this, this, and this. Every day, they're still teaching me, you know, they have their soul needs too. And as much as that is a part of my heart and a part of my personality, it, even more so than my channeling aspects of me, like dad overtakes everything. And then I'm Rob the channeler and Rob the husband and Rob the brother and son. That part still humbles me every day, because every day something new will pop up and it's like, I can't do anything about this. I've tried and I've tried. Well, you're not supposed to do anything about this because this is their life and not yours. You keep them safe. You keep them emotionally loved. You support them in the things that they need, but this is their incarnation too. And you don't think of your kids as creators until that's right there in front of your face.
And I think that's probably got to be one of the hardest lessons any parent has got to go through, is to understand that whatever you want for their destiny, you have to understand that they're the ultimate creator in that. And ultimately, whatever they're choosing, you mean you offer as much guidance and as much love as you possibly can and support, but ultimately, whatever preconceptions you may have had for their future is totally your own projections. And yeah, that's got to be a really difficult lesson for any parent to go through, especially when the circumstances are so severe as in yours. And I think it's beautiful that your son is already even proving that he's not as limited as the world told him he would be. You know, the doctor saying he's lucky if he lives to 18 and he's now 22. He's also demonstrating perseverance and power in his own choice to live beyond what others told him he would.
Yeah, he's being loved. His incarnation's not done yet, you know, and I respect the fact that it probably will be earlier than it would be, you know, that there's a good chance he won't live to be 70 or 80 or 90, like a lot of us would be. And you know, I've almost accepted that as a fact. But you know, I don't want to limit that either, because I don't know. And something interesting you said too, you know, the humbling part and the hard lesson to learn. But there's another side to that too. They choose the parents that they know will jump through hoops for them in certain things. like with our baby, you know, we've had a couple things happen with her where she's already had a couple surgeries too before she was 2 years old. And, you know, normal people who haven't gone through what I've gone through with my son, or haven't had the good intuition and a bond with a baby to understand its needs, even though it can't communicate with you too, most parents would have just listened to the doctor and not pushed to get the baby the help that they needed. So there's two sides to that too. You know, they're going to go into the parents that will do the most for them in the journey that they want to, which means when you're arguing and fighting with the doctors to get problems taken care of, you know, they know that that's your type of personality. If they need an intervention in that way or some form of help, and they want that as part of their greater plan too, then they know you're going to be the one to go up and butt heads with the doctor to get what they need too. So it's a balance, you know, and I've learned my part is the love, the nurture, the support, but also follow the instinct. Every instinct I have as a parent, I follow. Some of it doesn't work, and that's the emotionally tough part, but it's also meant for me to be doing that because, you know, they chose me to follow my instincts, just like the baby chose Kalina, and my son chose his mother, you know?
Yeah, and it brings back to everything that, you know, we were talking about at the very beginning, in how the guidance comes through Treb and Aridif, is that it's all about the free will and understanding that free will plays a role in all possibilities that have come from the probabilities available. And I think that's important for everyone to understand, especially when it comes to, because to me, like, timelines and everything like that, they're really just a sense of probabilities that are out there. And then however much you're choosing, whether you're realizing it or not, it could be unconscious choosing, it could be conscious choosing, subconscious choosing, but, and your own frequency is all helping to choose and strengthen a few different probabilities into possibilities. And I think that's kind of, in a way, I think it's a little difficult for a lot of us to wrap our heads around at the best of times, even, because it really does put the onus on us to be extremely conscious in every choice that we're making. And that can be very difficult in a world filled with many distractions.
It's the most difficult. That's the most human part of it. And, the free will aspect is really, really crazy. A lot of people in our community who understand, you know, that your soul having a human experience and that you have a higher self and that you have these guides working with you, they can wrap their head around that part of it. But when Aridif and Treb have told people, you know, they're like, well, why can't my higher self change or this or shift that or move this and help me with that? They always tell them, you know, the higher self is there to guide you. They're not there to do for you. That's your part. The free will belongs to the driving seat. The power of the soul sits in the body. That's where everything drives from. You know, everything above is there as like tech support or, you know, mechanic support. Whatever you need, they will assist you in getting for that experience. But you're the one who has to do it. You know, if you're destined to be a great orator or, you know, a lawyer, something like that, and then you decide that you want to murder someone who did you wrong, or you lose your temper and snap and kill them, that part of your journey's done. You've chose something that takes you outside of the realm of being able to do that. And, you know, you might still be a lawyer in prison or something, but you're not going to go out and do something that you can't do with that. We have the power to move mountains, but we also have the power to limit ourselves greatly. And as much as people say, you know, the higher self does this for me or assists this for me, they do. They assist everything that we do. And if our desire to come in was to be the best mechanic in the world and we end up not being a mechanic, the oversoul and the higher self don't care. They're not expectant on that fractal of us to do anything. All they want to do is support us. And all the soul really requires is experience. That's why you come down, you have a life. And if it's not the same as your life, you're still not losing anything, because the experience itself feeds up into the higher realms of consciousness, which feeds to the level above them. And even though hierarchy is a bad word to use, it's very fitting, because we are the smallest little fractal of energy out of all of these larger fractals that we come together to be a part of. Like every human that ever lived from the beginning of Earth to the end of Earth is part of the human collective consciousness. And every plant, animal, higher dimensional being, inhabitant of Earth from the beginning to the end of Earth ends up being the Earth collective consciousness. So it's all something smaller coming from something larger. And as long as we're giving that larger part something that's very individualized, an experience that no one else had, no one else can be Rob Gauthier and have two kids. No one else can be the exact experience that I've ever had. And even if I never channeled in this lifetime, although I feel being a father and channeling are my callings in life, the two callings for myself, even if I didn't channel, or even if I didn't have kids, the soul would still appreciate the experience, because it doesn't have that judgment of, oh, you know, you're a really nice person, this is a good life, or hey, you're a really bad person, this was a bad life, or hey, you hit the mark, that's great. No, it just wants you to experience. It wants you to get down there, get in Earth, have your experience, you know?
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that's something that was, when I was in my early 20s, my naturopath, who was very gifted beyond just naturopathy, and I was really very much still in my ego of wanting to really prove myself and do certain things. And I was like, I need to follow my calling, and I need to like be the best at whatever it is that I'm here to be the best at. And she asked me a really important question. She goes, well, what happens if you don't? And I was like, what do you mean if I don't? That's not an option. And she goes, but what if you don't? What does that mean about you? And I really can appreciate that question even 20 plus years later, because I now understand that, like what you were saying, there isn't anything here that we really need to do other than show up and have our experience. But really, it's all about, no matter what I'm doing or what I'm achieving or not achieving, can I still hold that capacity to, you know, appreciate myself and love myself and engage my experience exactly as it is, and not have the expectations that I think I'm supposed to have on myself. And I think that's something that we would eventually all come full circle to, you know, when we're going through a myriad of cycles of our own evolution. But that was something that is still sticks with me to today. And also, speaking to the point that you brought up, that I think, you know, we also go through this cycle of waking up and learning that there's all these amazing things beyond what we've ever known, and we want to just connect to as much of it as possible. And we think that there's something wrong with us, or there's some kind of, you know, we're too, let's just say, lower vibration to whatever else is out there, and not really truly realizing how powerful we already are. And that lesson has really hit home for me in the last 6 months, because a lot of my audience already knows this, but I, after, you know, 30 years of being completely anti-vax, and I was like, I don't want any vaccines in my body, I chose to get it at the end of last year, for my own personal reasons. And it was something that I had to really move through. But what it taught me was that there are so many things that we think we're going to do or not going to do in our life. And then there's an experience that comes up. We may not understand it, but I got to say this, and I'm going to say this for the first time on my channel. And I kind of want to write a book about this, but I never knew that the vaccine would be the ultimate teacher of mysticism to me, because I learned how to alchemize it. I learned to take my power back. I learned that there was nothing outside of me more powerful than me. And the vaccine actually became one of my greatest teachers. And if anyone were to tell me that a vaccine would become my greatest teacher in my you know, mid-40s, I'm like, you're out of your mind. But, you know, this is the whole state of, you know, we cannot pass judgment on things. And we have to understand that what we think something is or how our feelings are, our attachment or non-attachment to it is in a present moment could very much change down the road. And we've got to have enough leeway or give within our own judgments and experiences and willingness to expand beyond what we've already learned and known to move into perhaps a space we haven't yet achieved or tapped into. And so for me, it's really allowed me to open up and tap into a level of mysticism that I had no idea I was truly capable of. And so it's just really helped expand my mind. And so I love that, you know, there's this idea of, well, you know, a lot of people asked me, you know, why did your guides tell you to do this? And none of my guides ever told me to do this. It was a personal choice that I, physical frolic in this, you know, body made, you know, in the moment that I thought was best for me. And I think ultimately that's where we've all got to return to. And like what you said is that when we're coming to making our own decisions, yes, we want to tune into our heart and we want to be connected to, you know, our own source energy, our own higher self. But ultimately, it's us making the decision. We're not looking for the decision outside of us. We're looking to whatever feedback we need, communication, information, so that we get to make the decision on a free will plane.
I loved every bit of that. It's amazing because so many people have come to me during the whole pandemic. And what does Tripp and Artist say about this and that? And, you know, should we take the vaccine? Should we not take it? Should we worry about the virus? Should we not worry? And I was like, I'm going to tell you guys something very, very realistic about my experience with Tripp and Artif. I love them. They are a huge part of my life. I lean on them for everything, but I do not ask them for medical advice. Why? Because they've never lived in a human body and they can be a part of my experience as much as they want, but they don't have my belief systems about medical systems. They don't have my belief systems about illness. They sure as heck don't run in a body 1.0 when they're out doing the high dimensional thing. This is something that we have to do. And I can't do it for you either because my choice might not be yours. And I'm not going to go through the experience of trying to get you to see my side of it. And that was probably my most frustrating thing through this whole thing. Everybody fighting with everybody. And it's like, you guys have to make these choices for yourself. And if you step on the other people's free will to do what you think, you know, have them do what you think they should do, well, that's not really something that they're going to do, is it? That's not, even if they do it, it's not going to be on their own behalf. And if someone is worried about being injured with vaccines or having illnesses, do you think if they feel forced to do it, that that's not going to reflect bad in the energy with reaction of that, their body? And the same accord, if someone feels great doing it and doesn't get it, they could get sick, really sick from not having it because they believe they should have had it. It's like, why would you want to push one side or the other onto these people when it's a very, very individualized thing? And that's, you know, a lot of people have been so upset with me on social media, you know, you're a fence sitter, you're middleist, you know, centrist. I'm like, I've always been a centralist because I find when insanity spews, it usually comes from far over here and far over there. And when you find the middle, it's usually where the best, my energy is the most comfortable and the best answers are found. You know, if you want to have way over there, way over here, do it. But I can't do it. That's why I can't talk about politics or any of that stuff. It's just so hard. I know a lot about it, but it's just so infuriating to talk about it.
It's very infuriating. And I think it's designed to be infuriating.
It is.
And, you know, and this is like why I think it's so important when we talk about the zero point field and neutrality and how ultimately, you know, it's through this zero point field that we're able to make quantum leaps into our own growth or our own discoveries, whatever it might be. And the zero point is not on the extremes of things. It's in that space between the void. So being able to, you know, hold that space is actually not as easy as I think some people think, because our ego really doesn't like us sitting in the center or finding that zero point field. So it's I think it's a cop out for a lot of people who just don't understand that, well, I just don't need to push my views on anyone else, or I don't feel the need to have this discussion right now, you know, because a lot of times the discussions, if they're not being held between a few different people who are able to hold space, the true space that it honors another person's viewpoints, then it usually will end up going sideways. And we'll just end up probably not create the very thing that I think was intended in the beginning. So I feel, and this is why I feel like COVID was a gift for humanity, because I think it really highlighted how much as we hate this idea of there being some kind of elite group of people or entities that are controlling all of us, there's still that element within all of us that wants to control another. And until we are willing to truly face that and look at that and shift that, then we're never going to have an experience where we don't have these elites or entities or whatever you want to call them, group of people that seemingly from our perspective are controlling this entire world and our existence. So it really has been a blessing. It's not an easy one. It came in a very interesting disguise, but I think that it was a much needed drastic shift for humanity, because this is how I believe that we actually shift so quickly, is when we have such incredibly crazy times such as the last couple years that we've been through.
I agree 1,000% on everything you said. It's so hard to not be able to grow in an environment like that. Everything is unknown, everything is unsettling, and then when people start finding their intuition and acting upon it, they get to know themselves more than ever before. And that's what enlightenment is. That's what ascension is. That's what, the event is. It's where everybody becomes who they are. And more people have found themselves in ways they never imagined before this, through going through this. Every time a pandemic's happened in our history, people revolt in some form or way, or there's a civil disobedience in some way. But this time around, people are really showing their governments what they are unhappy about. You know, school systems, medical systems, everything needs to change so that everyone can have equal footing, comfortability, equality, everything that's not been done in our history since we started these new systems and old systems. And that's something Treb and I have shared so much, you know, this time. It's funny because 2021 was a real big surprise to so many people. But to me, I knew this was coming and I didn't know what it would be and I didn't know what it would look like. But Treb and Arif have always shared that, you know, hey, what's 2012? What's ascension? Well, it's a 9-year cycle before 2012, a 9-year cycle after 2012, where people's consciousness will shift and it'll start slow and accelerate and accelerate. And by the time it's done, humans will start new experiences. That's ascension. That's, you know, fourth density consciousness, whatever you want to look at it. That's our beginning. So we have that cycle and we look at it, and 2012 was crazy. Everybody who went through that in this community or other places, it was. A lot of people thought ships were going to land, excuse me. And a lot of people thought a lot of things were going to happen, a lot of disappointments. But the people who understood what it was there for, like this was going to be a placeholder for energy to shift within you, if you allow it to shift within you, they were able to start seeing their manifestations come in more quickly and get a bit more clarity on the things they were doing. And they took that with them the next year, the next year. And I can't remember if it was Ardif or Treb had said a few years back, like the last 3 years of that 9-year cycle will be the most intensive. And guess what? You know, 2019, 2020, and 2021 were definitely the most intensive. So this, I knew something was coming. you know, and in my own human way, I thought it was going to be a lot worse in some ways, because my own mind was like, how are people going to get on the same page? How are people going to understand themselves without understanding each other? And how are people going to understand each other if there's no big thing that happens where everyone's going to just feel the same way or see things the same way? And that's how I thought it was going to go down. You know, you ask Trevor Nardiff and they're like, what's the probabilities it could go anyway? And it's funny because the Nihal Collective is a group of beings that I've channeled many times before. They're one of the few beings I can channel on my own without going through Trevor Nardiff. And the Nihal are a future version of humans, a group that left Earth and went to Beta Leporis and settled and became the Nihal. And these beings have been talking probably since 2014 or 2015, and had tons of conversations with them. And we ask, you know, what's the event that comes that's going to shake things loose for you guys? And they never shared. You know, they said that it's an experience that we go through. You know, at that point, they were about 2 or 3% different than our timeline. And then 2019, 2020 came, and the Nihal finally came back in and talked. They hadn't been there for 2 years. They wouldn't talk. I tried to connect to them 2 or 3 times. They just wouldn't connect. Finally, they come back in after COVID was in full swing, and we saw how people were starting to divide and go crazy a little bit. And so, you know, Kalina's like, what's going on? What did you guys go through this? How did it end? How does it come out? Is everybody okay? Is everybody getting along now? And no, we never went through this. Ours was a near meteor hit. We thought that the meteor that was coming for us was going to hit with a 98% surety and probably kill about 70% of the people on Earth. And that's what brought us to our place. We had fighting, we had distractions, we had greedy people trying to hoard, and we had poor people trying to kill to get what they needed to survive. But eventually the thing missed, and we all learned these great lessons. This is your meteor hit. This is your great lesson. I was like, wow, it is our great lesson. Yeah.
Yeah, it truly is. And I think, you know, it comes back down to our own expectations of how we think things are supposed to play out or what our hopes are for the future. A lot of people, when they think of this concept of new Earth, you know, or 5D Earth and what it's going to feel like, what it's going to look like. And of course, it's really this it's this paradise kind of projection of what we think, you know, it would be. And we've all got to understand that whatever that projection is, whether it came from yourself or hearing it from other people, or maybe it's a mixture of everything, it's coming from whatever level of consciousness you're at in that moment. And that's got to be able to shift at some point. And we think that it's going to be this utopia. And what do we know what utopia really is? We have this concept of what we think it is, but truly, is that what it is? You know, when I look at it today, I've never seen so many people come together through online and support in, like, look at all the different movements that are happening in different countries for different reasons, coming together, supporting one another. We have never seen anything like this ever before, at least in our lifetime. You know, that has been worldwide support where people are actually caring about what's going on in your country and, you know, wanting to, like, offer support. And, you know, we're standing by you. We've got you. And there's literally to the point where there's financial donations, you know, being exchanged through different reasons in different countries. And, you know, we've never seen that. But I bet you none of us thought that 5D Earth would ever have that kind of concept to it, you know? And we think that money's gone and all these things, and, you know, like, there's so many different concepts. But again, it comes down to what I've learned in this idea that, again, I was anti-vax for, you know, 30 years. And again, it's not something I am pro-vax or anything like that, but I had to really shift my hard line with it to the point where I had to give it a little bit of leeway to learn something that I guess I was choosing to learn in that moment. And how it was coming to me, you know, I wouldn't have expected. I would have never expected that. And I think it's the same thing for what we're experiencing with this whole COVID situation. So I think one of the bigger lessons too, that we need to understand is that whatever our expectations are, they have to be loose expectations, like really loose expectations. And likely whatever is coming is probably going to be a far departure from what our expectations are.
That's it. And, you know, people have said, you know, when is the everybody meditating and no jobs and all? I'm like, that'll come, but that it's a long ways away. Look at how far we have to work internally to get there ourselves. You know, it's not going to take a year. It's not going to take 5 years. It might start showing us in our lifetime. Sure. We're already starting to see great things shift. But that utopia that everyone had perceived. But I think you made an extremely valid point of seeing all these people coming together. It's funny. People think, you know, that when people come together for this reason, it's good. But when they come to reason for this, it's bad. But I like seeing it all. You know, I liked the truckers working together to release mandates. And I also loved watching the people go on Washington, D.C. to start the mandates. I loved it all because people were coming together. And even though there were arguments and fights and stuff like that, on a small scale, the unity overcame the division. I watched 2020 with a little bit of horror. I'm not going to lie. I was so concerned about the state of the minds of people. I watched people supporting their causes and then watch these small minority of groups come in and start burning places and all this stuff. And I was horrified. I was like, this small group is going to deter people from wanting to gather, because then they're going to play the blame game. Everyone's pointing the fingers. Your side's doing this, my side's doing that. And then I watched something amazing happen where Trump supporters and Black Lives Matters were marching together for an event. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Last year, I could have never seen this coming. And even though the cause for that pisses some people off, people on both sides of that, people who were Trump supporters, people who were Black Lives Matter supporters, the fact was people who wanted to kill each other a year ago were standing in the same spot celebrating their desire to get the government to change something that they want to change. Loved it. Loved every bit of it. And I think it's naive to think that these things can't work themselves out. And I think it's naive for us to think that there's not going to be tension when it does. I mean, take yourself, think of the person that you dislike the most in the world, right? I can imagine that some listeners have people in their lives they hate. You know, I've had to fight hatred before. Hatred was something in my mind with certain people who had done things to me that I thought were so unforgivable that I actually felt a feeling called hatred towards them. But then all of a sudden, you look at all of the experiences and you try to put yourself in the shoes of that person. And oh my God, you can actually see why they might have had the imbalances they did to treat you the way they did. You know, it doesn't make it right, but you can get through that if you focus on that whole picture thing. And I know these are uncomfortable topics. I don't even feel comfortable talking about them half the time because so many people have such strong opinions about everything, and talking about almost anything now, dealing with the world can get people upset. But the fact is, people coming together, it's got to be good, no matter what it is, no matter how, unless it's involving hatred, you know, or violence or something like that. If people are just getting together for good cause, there will always be a few people doing bad things. But I think that's normal. It's got to be normal until it's not normal, until people demand that it doesn't happen. But that's like everything. People demanding the changes they want to see, and putting that energy into seeing it. And that's something I don't think anybody should be mad at, because when it's your turn to be passionate about something, do you want the resistance of other people there? Do you want to be able to come together with common cause for the betterment of people from your perspective? And even if it's not a betterment of someone, you know, you can go either way on all these hot topics, vaccine or mask or mandates or whatever. And there's an answer. That's there.
There has to be an answer that's there, that's right. But people are going to feel through their answers. And unless they have that visceral feeling of frustration and anger, it can't get them to the next level of understanding why they felt that. And then going through the emotions of healing that and then finding that answer that's there. No one can get there until they go through that. So as rough as it looks from a person on the outside looking in or external factor, it almost has to happen. And I really think that is exciting to see.
I agree with you. And speaking to this idea of anger and understanding that, you know, we're all at different levels of our own journey and experiences and different cycles of what we're going through. And we have to remember that, you know, there are some people that are going to have to go through that really angry phase in order to be the catalyst for them to want something better for themselves, you know, to want the change. Anger is often a very big catalyst for change. You know, whether you like that or not, it is. And so there and it kind of speaks to also this idea of, you know, having really strong opinions and all of that is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. However, you need to also understand, though, that if someone else is having a strong opinion opposing yours and it affects you emotionally and you're getting triggered, then that's just letting you know that you're not emotionally sovereign. Then that there's something that you don't feel completely secure in whatever it is that your opinions are on. Otherwise, it wouldn't bother you so much if someone else did. You know, like if you feel good in your space, then you're not going to be triggered through that. And, you know, and I want to jump back also to when we were talking about this idea of utopia and how you said, oh, people are like, well, when are we not going to have jobs anymore? And I got a download instantly as you said that first we must all go through understanding that we need to utilize the job to further our purpose, like to be able to shift the consciousness of what the job mentality holds right now. So a lot of people are just using it like to either get by, make money, support their family, you know, just do what they're supposed to do, like the society tells them what their expectations, maybe their family expectations are on them or even what their own expectations are. But once we start to first have to go through the process of like start to channel your joy through your work. And then once you start doing that, then you won't even need, then guess what? It just dissolves. You're still working, but you don't feel like you're working. And that's the whole trick of it all. It's not just like jobs just go away. You want to have a purpose. You want to be offering to society, but it will never get there until you know how to tap into that purpose and joy and channel it in through your work and creations.
That's beautiful. And a lot of people give older generations flack because, you know, they've created some of the harder systems for us to try to transmute. But there's wisdom in the people who've been on Earth for a long time. And the old adage, when you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, is absolutely honest and truth and using your talents to bring those changes in the world can take a really crappy job and turn it beautiful or to make it feel. But I also think too, you look at examples, Treb's race, they're fifth density. They're at the end of fifth density. They've already gone through their personal experience, like we're getting out of now and trying to go into connection. So they're leaving, right now they're leaving wisdom. So they've already went through where we went through, they went through connection, and they've gone through almost all of wisdom. So, I mean, they're evolved hundreds of thousands to millions of years beyond where we are, for sure, easily. And their race still holds jobs. They don't call it jobs. They call it excitements. Each of them self-appoints themselves something that they're excited to do. And it always serves a function in the greater collective. They do this job and they choose it for many years. They go through a process from birth all the way until they're sure that what they're excited about will be an excitement for them to carry. And once they know that, they're locked in and they just do it for the rest of their life. And they're excited by it because that's what their passion is. So they're still doing jobs and they're fifth density. And we're just like leaving out of the third and trying to skirt into the fourth as messily and best as we can. It's funny. The whole fourth density thing
is a very complex story, but because of our DNA and because of all the things that have happened as a race and kind of getting jump-started through our DNA manipulations early in history, all of the things that have happened there, we kind of jumped forward way too quick and then we jumped way back. So humans aren't really ready for the part of evolution we're going through anyway, which shows in a lot of our energy, but the quickness of how shifting this has been for the last 2 years really shows us that we're not as bad off or as behind as we thought we were, because even though it's messy and it looks crazy, we're getting done what we wanted to get done. We're changing ourselves. We're cementing ourselves in our beliefs, our excitements, and we're manifesting the things we want way quicker than we ever have. To me, that's a win all across the board, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, this, I love that they call it excitements, because I think that one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself on this light in this, on this planet, is the gift of setting your whole heart on fire with purpose, you know, something that just lights you up. And I can't, I was having this conversation with a friend the other day, and I was like, the whole concept of retirement is ludicrous. You know, like, I can imagine wanting to retire. I love what I do. And if you don't have this sense of purpose in some way where you feel like you're contributing, you know, and I only say, and it could be anything, you know, it doesn't have to be this grand thing, you know, but without that sense of purpose or aliveness within you that you're creating, you know, that to me is death if you're doing the opposite. And so retirement to me is like a fast track of death. It's like you're already saying, well, there's nothing left for me here. And I think that's part of the shift too, is, and I'm seeing that already happening in our society, that there are people who are finding their joy and they're living their joy in through their work. And they're like, I don't want to retire. And I'm like, yeah, me neither. I don't ever want to retire. I want to do my work till, you know, I'm 6 feet under. And I can't imagine why people would not want to continue working, but it's because they still hold this perception that your job is work and it's demanded of you by someone else versus inspired through your own heart's desires.
That's a beautiful way to look at it too. I love that. And you know, it's weird. I've lived in Michigan my whole life and I've worked in factories. Like before I started channeling, I've done everything. I worked with my dad doing carpet installation across the US. I traveled as a teenager from like New York City to Ogden, Utah, everywhere in between, right? I worked doing dishes for like 3 days. I worked in a restaurant doing dishes that didn't last long. I worked on a watermelon farm and a potato farm. So I've worked lots of different places before, lots of different jobs. The factory was always one of my favorite places to be because at the end of the day, I could see what I had done and see it in play. And I wasn't really excited by it. I was glad I got the check and it was nice to see the productivity of what I did. But there were people there who I work with, ranging from 18 years old all the way to nearly 60. And these people love their job. They're like, I am proud when I go home that I made the components for a dashboard that someone's going to look at for their beautiful new car for the next 10 years. And they're going to, you know, turn the air conditioner on and off because of me. They loved it. And that is what we need in everything. And some people can say, well, they've deluded themselves to enjoy such a menial task. Well, you know, it's, in my opinion, any task that you can do that gives you that sense of accomplishment, if it actually is rewarding to you, then it's worth it. And that's why we've seen the job thing go way out of control. They're offering like $17 an hour now at the McDonald's down the street from us because no one wanted to work there. The way that they were treated, the way that they were made to be degraded, you know, for punishment, they would have to do the worst jobs in there. They would be made to work twice as hard as everyone. Nobody wanted that. And now they have to treat people nice. And now They have to pay them well. And now you're going to see people who are excited to work in places that deliver people food. And even though it's not my type of joint, you know, I think I've eaten McDonald's twice in the last 10 years. Well, not 10 years, but at least five. People enjoy it. And some people can do it and it doesn't affect their bodies or so. But it's an excitement. And that's what this has given us as a gift of all. And as much as people kind of are upset by all the things that are happening, it really, you know, it sucks to go to a 24-hour gas station and have it closed three nights in a week. But when they're not treating people well or they're not paying them well, this will get people excited. More money, more opportunity, more leeway and family and needs and all that stuff. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's great.
You know, there is something, and this is something I've been talking about with my alchemy group recently, is there's a missing component within a lot of people who are going through their spiritual awakening or putting a lot of emphasis on their own spiritual development, where they're missing the boat on what we call menial tasks. And it's like And like you said, you know, although the systems that the older generations have brought us in and how we work and all of that, there is wisdom there that we can learn from. And there is something about the things that are not very mystical in our lives, such as discipline, such as structure, and as diligence and showing up and scheduling the things that you need to do and just doing them anyway, even if you don't feel like it, you know, working through some of that, that is part of the living process. That is part of the creation process, actually. You know, there are moments where things are just flowing and it doesn't feel like work and all that, but there's cycles. Like, we live in a cycle. You're never going to be on a cycle of constant creative flow. It's just not how it works. That's not how anything works in like this universe and in existence. There's always cycles. And so to deny the cycle of the fact that you may hit a rut or you may not always be in that creative flow, and you're going to have to tap into that masculine energy that just, you know, grits your teeth and bears down, like forces yourself to sit down, face what your tasks that you need to do and get them done, despite the fact that maybe in that moment you don't really feel like it, you're not feeling the joy, you know, but you've got to show up for yourself. And I think sometimes we dismiss the importance of that and the necessity of that. And when you do, you start to lose the momentum that you could be creating in this now for something that could potentially have a lot of power for you, because you're not allowing that other part of the equation to be part of your process. And you're thinking it's less than. And I think it's a really important part of the process. I call it divine discipline. And I think that we need to start learning how important divine discipline actually is in the creation process.
That's beautiful. I love that. I've never thought of it that way, but that's actually exactly how it works. And you're right too. A lot of that goes missing on myself. A lot of it goes missing on a lot of people. I'm the type that goes in the moment and likes kind of just jump in by the seat of my pants. But there are moments where I cannot do that. That is not going to happen. It's not going to work. It's not going to be productive for me. And begrudgingly, you make the switch over and you do it. But the energy there is something too, you know, the old generation, the new generation, the extremes of one, the extremes of the other. You know, my grandfather would go to work 14, 16 hours in a day and work 5 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week, and would never see his family and never be able to be there because that's what he had to do to get the job done and to make sure everyone's fed. And then some of the younger kids out there today don't want to do any work. They don't want to do anything of anything. You know, I've seen it through kids around my nieces and nephews whose parents don't offer them either excitement or motivation for anything. And there you go again, the two polar opposites. And usually, if everything's running on cycles, like you said, the universe is a gigantic cycle. It will end, it had a start, it will end, it goes all the way around in many different ways. what happens? You go in the middle and you find the answer to both. And I know for me that centralized centrist thinking works in almost every level for me, but the more balance that we find in the center of something gives us the opportunity to learn from the other side of it too. You know, I never thought of it that way, as the importance of having the counterbalance there, because it's just programmed in me. If I don't like doing it freestyle, I've got to sit down and break it down and do it the other way. But yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Alchemy is a beautiful tool to show you the process, yeah. You know?
Well, I think it's important because, you know, there's so many things that we don't necessarily like doing that we need to do. Like, for instance, do any of us really like going through a dark night of the soul experience? No, none of us like going through it, but we got to go through it in order to actually learn and grow and evolve and take in everything that we need to do. Well, the same is for anything else that's, you know, you can, the same thing goes for anything that may feel like it's outside your purview of strengths, you know, and we don't want to actually face the things that we're not exactly strong at. So, for instance, you know, I'm trying to write a couple of new books. I've written one, and I remember, you know, when I wrote my first one, I just had to force myself to sit down. I had to schedule time. And some days I would write 20 pages, no problem. Like, it would just fly out of me. And some days I'd be lucky if I wrote a paragraph, you know, but I had to force myself to sit down every day and dedicate certain time to, in order to get the book done, or the book just would have never got done. Some people think, oh, like, it's just eventually going to get done at some point. And it's not necessarily the case. Sometimes there are people who may have a beautiful, like, maybe it's part of their contract, I don't know, but it'll just flow out of them. They'll create it in a couple of weeks and it's done, you know, and that's great. But for the most part, that's not the reality. And I think, you know, when it comes to reaching your potential, you have to know that you're going to have to push past things that feel hard, that are feel difficult, or just don't feel good. It's not that they're wrong for you. It's just that you're needing to push past something and strengthen your own potential and actually discover more of your own potential. And you're never going to discover it until you, like, push yourself more. So I think this is where I'm, for me personally, what I am seeing more, like, you know, I see this happen. This is a topic that comes a lot within my own clients. And it's, you know, really important for anyone out there to understand, if you're struggling with this component, that it is, you're not alone. It's just a matter of, you know, it's not because it's not your strength and you're not just designed to do it. It's like you're here to reach your potential and to find whatever purpose you're wanting to discover in this moment. But you're going to have to go through different cycles and be okay with those cycles. And some of those cycles are not going to be mystical at all. They're going to be just discipline and hard work and, you know, bearing down and just putting your nose to the paper and getting it done. So I think once people start to loosen their perception of how something, again, perception expectations on how something's supposed to happen for them, and that, again, we're the creator, so we're choosing how much we're wanting to put into it. I see that there's so much potential in people. There's so much potential. And a lot of the times the thing that's in our way the most is our own self, you know, our own ideas of how things should be or what our expectations are. And once we can move past that, it's a big shift.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a hard thing for so many people to do anything that they're not flowing with in that moment. But if you think about all the things in the world that you don't like doing, but you do, then this is something too. I think a lot of misconceptions from our community come from the idea that being in your excitement is the best way to open your spirituality, that it should be that all the time, and that it should be completely, you know, I don't focus on things I don't like. I don't look at things I don't like. This is something I've tried to argue out, not argue out, but express my own side, which ends up usually starting arguments like, hey, we live on Earth. Earth is a vibration of mixed spectrum vibrations, from very disconnected to very connected. You can't logically expect that everything you experience will be just one side of the spectrum, no matter how great of a creator you are. You know, even ETs talk about races that are benevolent having wars done onto them or with them. You hear about all sorts of stuff. You know, there are still stars that supernova out in the universe. So it's not just Earth where it's happening, but Earth is like the spectral vibration showcase of our little local corner of the galaxy. And when we show the vibrations that can happen on Earth, there's almost an expectation that it's not going to happen, shouldn't happen, or you should divert your attention when it does happen. But part of that living Earth experience and living physical life is actually living on Earth to have the experiences that happen on Earth, the dedication, the hard time, but also the really bad stuff, the wars that happen. A lot of our community will hide away from that stuff. They're like, well, I don't watch news. Every time I hear someone, hey, quit talking about this, you're being negative and low vibrational. But for most people, they don't have that switch that they can just turn that off. They're jarred by this. They have to look at it. They have to process it. And when they process, a lot of time they get ashamed or you know, boohooed by a large part of our community. And the thing that's so frustrating for me to see is a lot of it gets egged on by teachers who teach people, hey, only think good thoughts, only have positive feelings, otherwise you'll never make it to ascension, or otherwise you'll never be a guru or never be a perfect spiritual being. Look at me. I am perfect. I do everything right. I never have a bad thought. And I've heard people say these things. And in some cases, I've known the person, you know what I mean? Developed friendships with them throughout the years of being in the same community. I'm like, what? What? You just said you're perfect, you know, that follow your lead and you can create, knowing their personal life that they don't share in the public, being a mess. And I'm like, why would you do that to people? You know, why are you telling them to do that? Because it sets an expectation level that you have to be perfect. And if you don't, you're losing. And if you're losing, then you're judging yourself. And then it just creates a cycle of self-judgment, self-delusion, self-entitlement. It's a really bad look for our community, I think, in a lot of ways, the way it's propagated and the way it continues to be pushed out there. You can't have the beautiful sunshine unless you have a storm sometimes, and you can't have a beautiful breeze if it's not colder to hot or hotter to cold. It's always got to be a force of change. Where we live, we're on Earth, we're in a universe that's dynamic and spectral too. So even if you took Earth out of the equation, you're still living in vibrations that are very disconnected and very connected, and everything in between.
No, I agree with you. It's been interesting to observe some of the propaganda that has come out of this community, especially when it comes to ascension. And I think there's just, it's really basic. You know, if you're wanting to move through your ascension, then you will. Every day you get to choose. And there are so many ways that you will be able to experience that. There isn't just one way. There are infinite ways. I had someone, you know, because I got a lot of flack from my audience when I disclosed that I was getting the vaccine or that I had gotten it. One person had said, oh, you won't be able to ascend now because someone said that when you get the vaccine, you can't ascend. And I'm like, well, who the hell would say something like that? And I'm like, that's the most ridiculous thing. And the fact that like people are eating this up and not even going within to see, like, that just means you've given your power away again. And I think there's so much that's being churned up for us to look at right now. So much of ourselves and how much we've given our power away, especially within the spiritual community and on the spiritual journey just in itself. We've all gone through this where we're always looking for the answers outside of us. Even when we are like going to beings, you know, through channeled sessions or even, you know, booking sessions with other people, it's okay to get guidance. It's absolutely okay. We've been doing that since the beginning of time of humanity. You know, there's always elders or people that you go to learn from their wisdom, but it's there to equip you with more information and knowledge so that you get to make your choice and decision, and you get to choose what is and what isn't, not to learn from someone else what is and isn't and what your choice should be or shouldn't be. And I think that's where some people tend to, it's a very fine line of understanding how to receive guidance and insight versus looking for an answer.
I absolutely agree. And that's one of the things I think I'm fortunate about, is that when I came into my community as a part of the community, unknown to everyone else, only me knowing about the community, when I first started sharing my channeling, I let everybody know who I was up front. You know, I am an imperfect human who has problems, who has issues to deal with in life, who is not perfect, who has mistakes, who gets mad, who gets angry, who gets frustrated. And I never stopped telling them that, ever. For years and years and years, I remind people, because it's not just, oh, well, you can channel. You've got to be some form of guru, or even Trevenardif. A lot of people do this with Trevenardif. Trevenardif are perfect from our perspective because they figured out all the stuff that humans can't. So to us, it looks really impressive. But they're still going through their journey. They haven't mastered it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in a body. If you're in a body, you're working things out. If you're in a body, you're going through an evolution, you're going through a learning experience. And even though they know a lot more than we do, and they're towards the end of their experience, while we're, you know, more towards the mid central, beginning central part of ours, it's still a learning journey. And that's the thing. When I heard Treb share something, I love Treb. Like I said, I went through 2 years with him. Then I asked him how to communicate his message to the world through channeling, and if it was viable. So I trusted him already. But the moment I knew that I knew that I knew that Treb was the most amazing being in the world, is when he told everybody, you know, your higher self is connecting to you. It is you. You know, your higher self is just a slightly elevated form, you know, of you. So when you're getting guidance, go to your heart, go to your higher self, because that is you. And when you are aligned with yourself, and when you trust yourself, no entity in the universe, the wisest or longest living being that's ever existed in the universe, the one that knows all things around them, can never tell you what's best for you than you. And when Treb said that, I was like, yeah, yeah. You know, as much of my trust as I gave to Treb, 95%, 99%, it was 1,000% at that moment, because I understood the thing that I knew, but saw instantly in the community that a lot of people had a problem with, the self-trust. I mean, literally the first thing I teach people when I teach them how to channel is self-trust, because if you don't have self-trust, you can't channel. And the thing is, if everyone had self-trust, channeling wouldn't be a thing. It would be a self-realizable tool, just like meditation or going to counseling or watching an informative movie. It would be just something that everyone did to help themselves a little more. But that's where we're headed, I think. That's the part that excites me, all of us finding that part of us, because we give our power away in so many different ways. And it's not just to gurus or teachers or whatever, but it's to everything, you know, social media, news organizations, politicians, food.
I was just going to say food.
You could go on.
Yeah, I know. On, yeah, but absolutely. Well, let me read here, because this is why I've enjoyed listening to some of your channels on your YouTube channel. And we'll have to have you back on the show, and maybe you can do a channeling as well. Here you say, in Treb's own words back from 2011, if you follow your heart is connected directly to your higher self and soul. And your soul knows better than anyone for you. It knows better than the wisest or longest living entity in this universe because it is you. It is part of you and it is what you need. So follow the heart and you will never be led wrong. Yeah. And I think that's super powerful. I think that's a fantastic message that everyone needs to take heart with.
That's when I fell in love, that moment after reading that. I'm a deep trance channeler, so I don't hear what's going on in that level. I proofread the book twice, and my English is horrible, but the other guy did too, Jefferson Fiscari, the other guy who did the book, luckily for us. But I read that after the final print of the book. He put that out as an insert. And I read that and I was like, oh my God, it never clicked when I was proofreading, but that's the most powerful thing I've ever heard in my life. Boom. And then Trev went from the 99.9% trust level to 1,000% trust and endearment, because, you know, anyone who tells you don't ask me for the final answer, that they have the best interest for you. You know what I mean? And I think all of us, when we learn that we have that answer and that we have more of our best interest than any other human alive, everyone's got agendas. It's funny. I tell everyone, Ardiff and Treb have an agenda. They want to communicate with humans to teach them. That's their agenda. They want humans to have more knowledge, but that's still an agenda. Just because it's not a malevolent agenda doesn't mean it's not an agenda. With ourselves, our agenda can be to empower ourselves. And if we have that and we work with ourselves and trust ourselves, is honestly the best thing. I really love that. That quote's one of my favorite. Thank you for bringing that.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I think before we end the show, I just really want to kind of touch in on this, is if you could just kind of let us know a little bit about Ardiff and Treb, because I understand Treb is a benevolent reptilian hybrid. Is it a human hybrid?
Yeah.
And have you seen them in your meditations? Okay. And if you could just give us a little bit of Ardiff and then Treb, but then I'd love to talk about why Treb has come to help humanity understand the malevolence of the reptilians, like for his race of reptilians.
Sure. First, Treb is a benevolent reptilian human hybrid, and he's actually a reptilian animal that was like second density, like an animal, and was mixed with a Nihal, and that's where the Nihal come in, which was a future version of human race. And that race was created, a hybridization. Right now, he's a fifth density being who lives in Capella. They look very reptilianish. The first time I saw him, it scared me. I do see him when I go into my astral projection state. That's who I'm with all the time. So while you're talking to Ardiff or Treb, I'm hanging out with Treb. You know, we're just kicking it. My friend calls it go fishing with Treb. And so we're just hanging out. And Ardiff, I met through Treb. I don't see him like I do Treb. I hear him. I feel him. I can connect to him when I'm talking to Treb, but it's never like visual. He's one dimension higher than Treb is. And when I'm with Treb, I'm hanging out on his dimensional level. So Ardiff is a sixth density ancient Pleiadian. Now they call him a humanoid because anything that appears like a human, they tend to call humanoid, like grays are considered humanoid, even though they don't look like a human. They're humanoid or humanish. So Ardiff is a very short blue-skinned being with like purple eyes, purple hair. Most people mistake him for a female, very feminine archetype of their body. There's art out there for both of them on our website, but also around the internet, a lot of people have done art of him and Treb. So
yeah, that sounds very Palladian, the more feminine kind of body to be mistaken. That to me is a very Palladian quality. So with Treb, then, let's just close off on this, because this is another lesson that I learned through receiving the vaccine, is because I was actually communicating with the consciousness of the spike proteins. And I started to understand that through some downloads that I was receiving, that you know, our interaction with what we may consider lower consciousness, ones that are more derived in fear, that how our intention is to interact with it could help it evolve to a place where it may have had malevolent intentions, but it can evolve into benevolent intentions. And but it's, you know, part of that is determined through our own choice on how we choose to interact with it. You know, do we choose to be in complete fear of it and hate it and push it away in resistance? Or do we inquire and choose to, you know, engage in a more evolved way? So what has, you know, whatever you've learned with Treb, through whatever your interaction has been with him, or the, through any channelings that have come through, what do you know in how their reptilian race has been able to evolve beyond the malevolent ones that seem to be in plentitude in this universe and galaxy?
First of all, when I met Treb, I understood that they were kind of guided and raised by the Nihal. So they grew up very well. They were taught the type one philosophy, you know, the oneness, the connection. So they didn't really have any problem evolving. The other reptilians, the ones, the Earth reptilians, Alpha Draconians, I've learned a lot about them. And what I've learned about them is equally valuable and goes right into the thread of what you're talking about. Treb's race helped me open up to reptilian energy too, because the only thing I'd ever heard before I met Treb was that reptilians are nasty and that they are demonic and blah, 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 blah. So the first thing I learned is their energy was intense. Their energy was dominant. Their energy was projected onto anything that they wanted to overpower. It's very basic. I dealt with humans like that all the time. I used to get in trouble for beating up bullies at our school. Like, it's a whole story, but yeah, I used to beat up the kids who picked on the mentally handicapped kids and stuff from our school. So I, you know, that was a different thing, but I understood the energy behind it, and it made me take notice. You know, the draconian energy and the reptilian energy, as easy as it is to hate, you have to understand who and what they are before you can understand anything about them. What I've come to learn is that they both have had very different paths than what people are told. That if you want to look on it at a very human level, even though if you ask them, they would tell you, no, we haven't gone through trauma. We don't have trauma because we're not afraid of anything, which is probably true. But their race back then went through trauma. One of them was almost annihilated, and the other one, I'm not sure what trauma was there, but there was a huge trauma there. They had to be guarded. They had to become dominant. Alpha Draconians didn't even come from this universal structure. They came from an entirely different matrix. And when they came from that, they were considered fairly low on the totem pole. So they had to be pretty badass to survive in the area that they came from. They exist as beings who can't, you know, like everything in our universe is naturally evolving, right? We go through our densities and dimensions, and we get from A to Z. And once you're done with sixth density, you go back to oneness, and you could play the whole game over again. You know, hey, we'll start a new planet or a new solar system, new galaxy, whatever. You can do that. That's consciousness evolution. Draconians are at the end. They're at like 99.9999% done. And they have been there forever. That's why they're the oldest living beings in our galaxy. They have learned to circumvent
that incarnation cycle. They don't have to leave physical reality to go to the next level. And they've learned how to do that. And they disconnect their self from source energy. And what provides that? Well, technology. They have better technology than every race in the galaxy because they're ancient and because they want one thing, and that's to exist as who they are. Now, I don't know anyone who can be mad at another person or human being or any being for wanting to be who they are. I adore the fractal that is Rob. I love my personality. I love my life. I love my experiences. Asking me to be someone else would be met very quickly with a no. And if it was a continued pressing, then it would be measured back with the level of aggression that came to me. It would always be that way because I'm not going to be who you want me to be because you want me to be that person. And that's all they are. That's what they're going through right now. The system of evolution wants them to go back to oneness. They don't want to. And the one thing that they found that creates enough disconnection is massive fear and disconnection emotionally from planets full of beings. So even to say, you know, they teach these other reptilians the way to manipulate planets of consciousness, planets of beings. They taught the Earth reptilians, and we live on the same planet as them, but even they had trauma. They were almost annihilated by a race of beings who wanted to kill them because they were relatives of the Alpha Draconians, because they were lent their DNA. So before you start hating something, you need to understand it. And most of the time, when you get to understand it and put yourself in their shoes, just like any political ideology, any worldly ideology, vaccines, mandates, sports teams, before you get into that level where you hate this other being or person, you really have to understand them. And I can say wholeheartedly, now that I understand Draconian beings, Earth reptilians, I don't like their actions in some cases, but I understand. I don't hate them. Quite a few of them have gone out of their way to do good things for them. Like the Draconians are one of the major reasons we don't have wars on this Earth from other ETs flying down like you did in the Mahabharata and the other Indo-ET wars, because they kind of run the place around here and they don't let other people or other entities come to our planet and mess around anymore. You know, that's good. So you have to understand them before you can really place a judgment. And for one, I've taught myself long ago, I still judge people. I still judge things. It's a natural instinctive reaction as a human, but I try my hardest not to judge anything, anyone, until I really understand it. And if I understand there's a pure malevolence that comes from the mindset and action, then I judge it accordingly. Then I judge it as bad and evil or whatever. But even then, if everything I've taught is right, that's a projection for myself anyway. And I've already hated the evil Rob. I knew him well. I fought many years to not be evil Rob, and just so frightened from that, I created more issues within myself. But we try to quit judge, you know. It's an external concept being played out from the internal anyway, if we look at it at the deepest, deepest level. So you're just hating yourself. If everything's one, you're just hating yourself.
No, I completely understand that. And that's very interesting information. Thanks for sharing all of that. And it's true, you know, like, there's, I think about myself, I've gone through a pretty debaucherous period of time in my life that is not who I am today, but it is part of me. It was part of my journey. And I think the hardest part of being able to move forward is learning how to understand. And once you understand, you can actually appreciate. And I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say I would love a reptilian, but you know, I can absolutely understand the need to have full expression of who you are and to not have that denied in any way, shape, or form. But it's like, you know, when it comes to your own self, the best way to heal is to engage and to embrace, I should say, to embrace. Like for me, it was like, I want to embrace Debauchress Nicole. I want to give her a hug. I understand why she'd made all the choices she made. I understand why she did what she did. And I love her even more for it. And it's just like, all I needed was love, but I didn't want to do that to me because there was this like, you can't love this. This is horrible. Like what I'm doing, you know? And so it does require a higher perspective to look at it. But at the same time, we're human. And like you said, we're going to judge and we're going to have all these preconceived notions or expectations, judgments, and it's just part of the journey, you know? And I think part of the journey is learning how to catch it and reprogram ourselves if we choose to, if we want to, and go from there. But that's fascinating information. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. I'm glad I had a chance to, and it's a big subject and a tough one, but I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. And I know you're wrapping up too, and I've had a really, really fun time tonight. A really great conversation. I hope all of your listeners get something from that.
Well, let my listeners know. I'm going to provide a lot of links in the description below the video and in the show notes on the podcast. But if you've got anything going on right now, you can absolutely plug that and let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, every month we do two things for our Patreon. There's $11 and $22 tiers there. We do two exclusive channelings there every month, a Q&A where you send in your personal questions. And then people choose topics and then we put them up and vote to hear what Artif has to say about those. And we do a channeling class every month, a group channeling class. And I've got my personal sessions. But for most people, I would say who are new to our channeling, go to the YouTube. There's literally thousands of hours of free material there. We've kept it up since 2013 or 2014. Probably the older dates you're going to see on there, but we've kept everything from that point up. Look at what you want. Look, it's not well organized in the older stuff. We just put up hours of channeling at a time. But a lot of great stuff there. So if you resonate with it, there's more, a lot to watch. And our Discord, if you like spiritual communities, our Discord channel is amazing. And it's really built up really well. We've got over 200 people there from all across the world. So there's someone there almost 24 hours. You can jump on the chat with them and talk to a stranger across the world about ETs or about consciousness, about how to cook a cake, whatever you want to do. It's there. So all that stuff.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking your time to be on the show. And I'll definitely have you back on. We'll do a channeling. That'll be a lot of fun. And to the audience, I love you guys so much. Have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you guys next week. Thanks again for joining me for another show on the Enlighten Up podcast. I love you guys so much for all of your continued support. So remember to raise your vibe, find your tribe, and be open to the infinite possibilities held in the mysteries that surround us all. Thanks again for sharing the show with your family and friends. And if you're new to the show and you need to find out more information about me, please head on over to my website, NicoleFrolick.com, where you can join my newsletter. And please follow me on Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube. Keep your light bright, and I'll see you next week.